We have come to the practical section of this letter, the practical application of what it means, whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Yeshua, giving thanks to God the Father through him. And that applies in a very special way to Christian marriage, to believing marriage, marriage of believers. We were looking at verse 18, wives, submit to your own husbands as is fitting in the Lord. And now in verse 19, we look at the husband's responsibility. Husbands, love your wives and do not become bitter toward them. That word be should be translated become, marking the danger of accumulated resentment. This is the thing the husband has to guard against. Accumulated resentment against the wife. Remembering things that were past years ago, or, oh, she's always the same. That kind of bitter attitude that is fatal to a happy marriage. That means we have to put away bitterness from us. And in these two verses, verses 18 and 19, we have God's blueprint for a godly marriage and a happy relationship with each other. We're going to look at two passages which deal with this. One is found in Ephesians chapter 5, verses 25 to 33. We started to look at this last week. Ephesians 5 from verse 25. This is the area where the husband commonly falls down. He doesn't love his wife the way she craves him to love her. We're always learning, aren't we? I'm talking to the men, and I include myself. We're always learning. It's a lifelong learning process, truly, to love our wives so that their hearts are at rest. Verse 25, husbands, love your wives just as Messiah also loved the Kehillah and gave himself for her, that he might sanctify and cleanse her with the washing of water by the word, that he might present her to himself a glorious Kehillah, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and without blemish. So husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. For no one ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as the Lord does the Kehillah. For we are members of his body, of his flesh and of his bones. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Messiah and the Kehillah. Nevertheless, let each one of you in particular so love his own wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. By way of introduction, the love of husbands is to be ruled by that principle that we have in verses 15 through 21, walking circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise. And verse 21, submitting to one another in the fear of God. A wise husband will take all his wife's wishes into account. He will make due allowance for all her thoughts and feelings. He may have to make difficult decisions, but only after serious thought and consideration of her cause. Due deference. There is a threefold cord. The husband, the wife, and God. God is in the equation. And because God is in the equation, therefore, the marriage will be blessed. And it will survive all the shocks that come upon it when God is at the center of the relationship. A threefold cord, says the Bible, is not quickly broken. We see how Messiah loves his Kehillah. Verse 25, he gave himself for her. That's redemption. Verse 26, he sanctifies and cleanses her. That's sanctification. And verse 27, that he might present her to himself, a glorious Kehillah, that is glorification. The governing principle here is, love your wives even as. Now, that's why I say we are learning all our life how to love our wives. There's always room for improvement. Even as Messiah loved the Kehillah, that's the high supernatural standard that is required of every believing husband. To aim for that, how does Messiah love his Kehillah? We read, as his own body. That is to say, the Kehillah is his body. We are members of his body, of his flesh and of his bones. We're going to take the four headings we used for the wives: protection, provision, personal fellowship, and guidance. And again, we go to the Song of Solomon, because that describes the love between a bridegroom and the bride. In the Song of Solomon, chapter 4, verse 12. Song of Solomon, chapter 4, and verse 12. A garden enclosed is my sister, my spouse, a spring shut up, a fountain sealed. There is protection for the bride. She's enclosed. He hedges her around. She is his exclusive possession. And that garden, with all its beauty, with its abundant water supply, spring shut up, a fountain sealed, is for him alone. That's protection. Remember what David did in the first book of Samuel, chapter 30. We read that he and his men came back to their town of Ziklag and found it sacked and burned to the ground. All their wives, their children, their loved ones, their possessions had been taken captive. David and his men wept until there was no more strength in them to weep. David, in his distress, besought the Lord, "What shall I do? Will you help me to recover these captives from the raiding party of the Amalekites?" And God said, "Pursue, and you will overtake, and without doubt you will recover all." So David put his life on the line, and he took his men with him and pursued after the raiding Amalekites. And we read in 1 Samuel 30 that he smote them and delivered his wife. How pleased were David's wives to see him appear with his soldiers to rescue them. Protection. The wife is always pleased when her husband will take risks in order to protect them. So we read in 1 Samuel chapter 30, verse 18, David recovered all that the Amalekites had carried away, and David rescued his two wives, and nothing of theirs was lacking, either small or great, sons or daughters, spoil or anything which they had taken from them. David recovered all. So the wife has the right to look to her husband for protection. But there's another way in which we protect our wives. The Bible says we are to love our wives, verse 28 of Ephesians 5, love our own wives as our own bodies. The wife is part of me. My wife is part of me. I am part of her. We are one flesh. He who loves his wife loves himself. Here's how it works. Our body, our literal body, my little body, your little body, literal body, it has weaknesses, it has defects, it's got quirks, it's got susceptibilities. Just how we are born. We are born with certain built-in strengths, and conversely, there are certain areas of weakness in our body. Perhaps we catch colds easily. Perhaps we are susceptible to drafts, things like that. If we are wise, we will shield ourselves, our physical bodies, from the things that aggravate them. If there are certain foods that we are allergic to, we'll avoid eating those foods. This is the kind of thing. This is what we are to do for our wives. Avoid those things that bother her. When we see that something we do or say annoys or distresses our wife, we're not to turn around and say to her, "You're being childish. You'd better grow up." That is the antithesis of love. That is not love at all. That is pure selfishness and inconsiderateness. What we do is to say, "All right, I'll make sure that I avoid those things that bother her. I'll make sure that my sense of humor, which my fellow men enjoy, but which she doesn't, I'll make sure that I don't use that sense of humor on her." The wife takes her husband much more seriously than another male friend or a male relative. Therefore, we have to take that into account. Be ready. Here's something else. Be ready to shield your wife from shame, even if it means that you are being shamed instead. Sometimes she may do something that embarrasses you. What are you going to do? Are you going to somehow get away from the embarrassment by attacking her in public? Or are you going to take the embarrassment and absorb it? The Bible says we are to love our wife even as Messiah loved his Kehillah. How much we embarrass our Messiah. How many times we grieve him and dishonor him in the eyes of others. And what does he do? The Bible says there's no condemnation. He loves us. He knows our faults, but he loves us. And that's what the husband will do. In the book of Numbers, chapter 23, there's the account of a man that was hired to curse the people of Israel. And if there's ever a book that catalogues the failures and the sins of our people, it's this book of Numbers. This man that was hired to curse the people of Israel was called Balaam. What does God say? "You shall not curse the people, for they are blessed." And so, in Numbers 23, verse 20 and 21, he says something that is quite breathtaking. "Behold," says Balaam, "I have received a command to bless. He has blessed and I cannot reverse it. He has not observed iniquity in Jacob, nor has he seen wickedness in Israel. The Lord his God is with him, and the shout of a king is among them." Well, my, that is quite breathtaking. How many times the Lord had to chastise his people, but that was just in the family. That was just in the relationship of a father to his children or a king to his subjects. But nobody else can pick up the stick. Nobody else can punish. "He has not observed iniquity in Jacob, nor has he seen wickedness in Israel. God in his mercy bypassed, overlooked the failings of his people." Another way in which a husband can protect his wife is to protect her from criticism. The criticism may be true. None of us are perfect. It may be true. But the husband will have nothing to do with that criticism. He will say, "It's not your business. If there's anything that needs to be said to my wife, we will talk it over in private. You stay out of it." Shield her from things that distress her, have nothing to do with criticism of her. What good does criticism do? It just makes things worse. Use plenty of TLC, tender loving care. I was privileged to conduct the wedding service of two of my people, both of them believers. I knew the husband well enough, and I said to him, "David, tenderness, tenderness. Tenderness. I felt I had to say it, and subsequent events vindicated my having my exhortation. We are not tender enough. Messiah gave himself for us, the husband should give himself for his wife. Protection. Shield her around. Let her know, I am for you. Heart and soul, I am for you. And I will do all I can with God's help to protect you, to shield you, to give you the security that you're looking for. Secondly, provision. In the book of, in the letter to Timothy, Shaul writes to him and he says, if any, 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 8, but if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. A good husband will make sure that his wife is well provided. In our ketubah, the betrothal document, three things the husband promises. The duty of marriage, clothes, and food for his wife. Provision, we are meant to provide. When we are hungry, when we husbands are hungry or cold or in need of shelter, what do? Do the same for her. Is she hungry? Is she cold? Is she in need of shelter? Provide for her. Make sure she has enough to meet her hunger, her physical hunger. Or if she's cold, that she has enough clothes. These are elementary things, but how husbands neglect their wives. In the case of one couple, the wife said to me, my husband never gives me any money for clothes. I just have to pray that God will give me the money to buy my own clothes. That's scandalous. Those two were Christians. It was a Christian couple. Yet the husband only gave her enough for housekeeping. Nothing to get maybe the sweater that she favors, that she's seen in the store, or something like that. Make sure that she's amply provided for in this area. Provision. Make sure that she's well nourished, well clothed, well sheltered in physical things and in spiritual and emotional. She needs love. You don't have to pamper her, but you certainly are to consider her, how much it means to her. What security the wife feels when she knows that if she wants that dress, the husband will say, all right, here's a check, or just write out a check for yourself. Provision. Thirdly, personal fellowship. Can two walk together except they be agreed, says the prophet Amos. In Deuteronomy, the law, in Deuteronomy 24, the law also speaks about personal fellowship. This is very important. A great Bible teacher said, your house is not a dormitory. You don't just go to your house to sleep. I remember hearing on the radio, a woman was being interviewed. Yes, when my husband comes home, he has his supper, and then he goes down to the pub to talk with the boys and maybe to play darts or whatever. Your house is not a dormitory. Your house is your castle, and it's hers as well. And you're meant to live in personal fellowship. In Deuteronomy 24, verse 5, listen to this. When a man has taken a new wife, he shall not go out to war or be charged with any business. He shall be free at home 1 year and bring happiness to his wife whom he has taken. Personal fellowship, it's in the law. Who said that the law is negative? It teaches love and care for one another. Personal fellowship. When I was in the north, northern BC, my host was telling me about a man who hardly ever talked to his wife. She'd talk to him and he'd just grunt or answer in monosyllables. So she thought she'd try and draw him out by arguing with him. It was no good. He agreed with her. With everything, she argued. One last time, in sheer desperation, as they're driving by, she said, "Look at that stream outside. It's going uphill." He said, "Stream, water doesn't go uphill." "Yes, I saw it," she thought. She thought, "I got him now. I'm going to get him to talk with me, to argue with me." You know what that miserable wretch said? "Oh, all right, it's flowing upstream." He let her down. That is not personal fellowship. Personal fellowship is not the traditional picture of the man at breakfast who props up his morning paper before his face and reaches behind the paper for his cup of tea. And when she talks to him, he grunts. Well, if you'll excuse the expression, there are certain animals that grunt. No, personal fellowship means courtship. It means courtesy. What you began in order to woo her and to win her for yourself. How much you coveted her when you were courting her. Now you have her. She is your wife. It is the basest deceit then to say, "I've caught my fish. I don't need to keep up the pretense anymore." That's the grossest deception. Courtship, courtesy, only begins with marriage. And you ought to be courting her and showing her courtesy all your life. Be consistent. If that's how you were before your marriage, that's how you should be after. Do you think Messiah has changed in his attitude to his people? Now that he has loved us and won us to himself, does he now love us any less? When you find a great treasure, you take double care to safeguard it and to protect it. And so it is with marriage, personal fellowship. Talk with her. You've been at the office all day, maybe. She's been at home with the kids. "Mom, he hit me. Mom, he started it first." She's gasping for some intelligent adult conversation. And when you come home, you're tired and you say, "Oh, please, I've had talk in my ears all day long." She has not heard you. She longs to be able to unburden herself. You are her burden bearer. You're meant there to carry the load with her. You're meant to show sympathy and concern, a ready ear. Personal fellowship, it refers to conversation, respect, every consideration to her wishes before you make decisions. Something has been bothering her all day, and when you come home, she can't hold it in anymore. She just pours it out. Your task is to be a good listener. She needs your help. It is a cry for help when she does so. Decide everything. When you come to make important decisions, decide everything with her. The more important the decision is, the more important it is that you should decide together. And if she doesn't see things your way, don't move until she does. God has made us both one. We dare to believe that we two believers have been brought together by God in a sacred partnership, a covenant relationship with each other. That means that when we decide something important, we must decide together. And if one or other cannot see that way, don't move. Pray about it some more until you finally see eye to eye. Very, very important. I'm thinking of those people who disregarded their wives' distress and their pleadings and went ahead and did what they wanted to do, convinced that they were right. If your wife does not agree with you, it's God warning you through her and telling you, "Hold it, you're moving too fast." Does your wife, in personal fellowship, share your secrets, your joys, your sorrows, your honor, your afflictions, your adversities? Don't insult her by depriving her. She is quite happy to share the negative as well as the positive. She wants to share you all together. She wants to have you all together. She takes you. I'm afraid she does take you more than we take her. The wife is more ready to take her husband lock, stock and barrel than the husband is to take his wife in the same way. So don't insult her by depriving her even from your distresses. Share your burdens with her. She wants to know. She feels honored when you do so. Conversation. Pray together. A great man of God said, here's another example. He was invited to a social event. They invited him, but they didn't mention his wife. He said, I automatically refused it. I automatically rejected the invitation. How dare they invite you to a social event and not mention your wife? That's an insult to her. And therefore, the best thing to do is to throw the invitation into the basket and, if possible, tell them that they have fallen down. Listen to her. God many times speaks to the husband through the wife. Lastly, guidance. 1 Corinthians, I've not been looking at the Song of Solomon, have I? In the Song of Solomon chapter 1, in the matter of guidance, here's the bride speaking to her bridegroom. Song of Solomon chapter 1, verses 7 and 8. She is talking to her beloved, and she says, tell me, O you whom I love, where you feed your flock, where you make it rest at noon, for why should I be as one who veils herself by the flocks of your companions? And the beloved replies, if you do not know, O fairest among women, follow in the footsteps of the flock and feed your little goats beside the shepherd's tents. She wants to be with him. She wants to be guided by him. Why should I turn aside? I want to follow you. Guidance. The husband is the priest of the family. He ought to be. But a good leader is not an autocrat. A good leader is one who takes into consideration all the wishes of his people, and especially in marriage. When correcting, maybe there's time when you need to pull her up about something. How are you going to do it? In what spirit? If you can't do it lovingly and tenderly, don't say anything. That's the lesser of the two evils, by far. Wait until you can talk about it and she is in the right attitude to receive what you have to say about it. As she can bear it and in love. And of course, when considering call to the service of God, she must be consulted. Jacob, when he received a call from God to go back to his father Isaac, called his wives, Leah and Rachel, out to the field, and he consulted with them, and he said, God has told me that I'm to go back. They said, go back. You see this wise man? He consulted with his wives before he made the move. Even though it was God who had called him, he knew that if this was God's call, his wives would ratify it. And so they did. So, by way of conclusion, men, remember your marriage vows. Memorize them. Run them over through your mind periodically. To have and to hold, to cherish, to keep, above all other, in sickness, in health, for richer, for poorer, for better, for worse. Run through these in your mind. Remind yourself, you made a vow before God and before men when you married her. Remember those vows and get God's help to keep it. And another thing you should memorize is the love chapter, 1 Corinthians 13. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Ask yourself, what would Messiah have done? How would he have treated us as his people under such circumstances? Some of you have heard about Bill Gothard and the Basic Institute in Youth Conflicts. He has also a special study course for pastors. And you know what he said? This will stun you. He said the most frequently asked question in the wife's mind and heart is, will my husband leave me for another person? Christian leaders, that's what their wives feared most. Will he leave me for another woman? What is the antidote to that? Make sure that you reassure her it will never happen with the help of God. God helping me, may I die first before I do such a thing. Love is a rare plant. It needs regular and careful tending. And it is an indispensable ingredient of holiness. You are not a holy man if you are not a loving man. Well, just by way of postscript, the family is like the government. There's the governing party, that's the husband. There's the loyal opposition, that's the wife. And the constituency, those are the kids, the rest of the family. Well, may the Lord bless his word to our hearts, and God help us to be better husbands. We have about 5 minutes for questions, comments, questions.